I, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, am an unqualified success.
Now get the guns, the drugs from my generation.
Years ago, I took on every wrestling promoter throughout North America. I kicked every one of their asses.
The fraud, the messer with me.
In a court of law, I took on the United States of America, and I kicked her ass. I took on WCW, and it took me a while, but I kicked their asses. Not because I was an asshole, no, no. Ask me, Mr. McMahon, what's your secret? More than any one quality that makes me the successful man that I am, ruthless aggression. So I want to know here tonight, as you stand here on my ring, which one of you has that quality? Who among you has that one single ingredient? Who has enough ruthless aggression?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
P-P-A, no info for the DEA. Federal agents mad cause I'm flagrant. Tap myself and the phone in the basement.
North South Connection. Welcome again to another episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. We find ourselves at a very historic week in WWE history, which we'll get into. By we, I mean me and my guest, who is a returning guest, probably been on three or four times, I'd imagine, at this point. I don't know for sure. So his introduction, the shit take kid, Sean Kidd. It kind of works out because that's Kidd and Sean. How are you doing, Sean?
Hey, I'm doing good. The shit take kid is fine. King of the shit takes is fine. Whatever you want, whatever shit take you want to put in there is okay with me, Jake. But it's great to be here again. It is my third appearance, so really looking forward to tonight. It's definitely a historic time in WWE.
Yeah, it's the quality of the shows maybe not the greatest, but the definitely some significant things going on. One is going to be more obvious than others. So I think we should probably hop right into it because we have a lot just to talk about with the news and notes before we even get into the two shows. So if you're keeping track of the date, we are at the June 10th, 2002 Raw, which is famous. It is in Atlanta and is because Stone Cold Steve Austin has walked out on the company. So I'm getting this all from the Observer. So this is kind of Dave's version at the time, which this is a well-known story in wrestling. So about 6 hours before the show, Stone Cold decided that, he was going to fly home because he was not happy with, basically his creative. The whole story, the famous thing is that he was booked to face Brock on this Raw in like a King of the Ring qualifying match. And he didn't think that that was a great idea. Obviously, because he felt that if he had, because he was supposed to apparently lose, like Dave says here, he thinks he was probably going to lose or drop to Brock, even though he's not sure. And it would later come out that he was. And so Austin's side of it is always that he had no problem with losing to Brock. It's just a matter of if you're going to have a rising star like Brock Lesnar, who's still pretty new and, you know, obviously arguably the biggest star they've ever had in Austin, that you shouldn't just throw this away with no promo on free TV. And, you know, this should be like a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam, some big match. And this shouldn't just be a throwaway on TV, which it's hard to argue with him. And I don't think many people at this point argue with him over that.
No, I agree. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, if you think about it, at the time they really, well, I'm sure we'll get into it and how they treated Austin in terms of the way he walked out. But if you go back and you think about it and look at it now and see where Brock is today, and if Austin, the biggest star at the time, had gone through with that at the time without any buildup or anything, he had a really strong case for it. But he was already angry at that point anyway, so this was kind of like the icing on the cake.
Yeah, and doing this deep dive, and me and Steve talked about it on the last show, is that, you know, the Brock thing is sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. But now, after doing this podcast and really looking at all these shows since the draft and like post Mania 18 and everything, you could kind of see, you know, where his discontent comes from. Because I would say, and you've kind of been with me, even if you haven't been on every episode, but I would say the stuff he's been doing at this during these last few months is mediocre at best, like as far as the angles he's in, and at times actively bad. Like we talked last week about, you know, essentially they're doing an angle where whoever loses out of him and Flair is going to be a butler or an assistant, which is like the hokiest, goofiest angle, you know, that you can do, even if it is Flair and Austin. Mm-hmm.
And you could even go back to, as far as to, you know, back when in 2000, the end of 2001, when Jericho won the title, and then once Austin got out of that world title scene and started heading into Mania, it's been a downhill slope for him. And that's how he's felt, like, since the booking, since his unified title match, I think, was at the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. Ever since, and then ever since then, it's just been downhill for him. And this is just kind of the crescendo that just blows it all up.
Yeah, like we talked about last week, him pissing on Arn, stuff like that. I can't imagine Austin the way he in his mind. yeah, exactly. Mustard. Like the way he kind of thinks of things, and he obviously did goofy stuff during the Attitude Era, but it was kind of different because there was like actual heat, and yeah, so you could kind of get where he's coming from, which I think time has been on his side as far as being, you know, upset right? about his direction. But so something I was going to ask you, Sean. So do you think the way he handled this, what are your thoughts on the way he handled it? Just kind of showing up and leaving and kind of leaving them high and dry like this?
Well, I think in any job or any situation you're in, when you're upset and you're pent up, walking out's always the wrong move to do because you don't really get a chance to resolve the problem. But the problem is he's been voicing his displeasure. Like he was on Bite This, talked about the creative. But the sad thing at this point for me is it looks like he was moving in a good direction because it seemed like they were putting him with Eddie Guerrero, which you talked about on your past pods already. So he was in a good spot to work with someone that he felt was going to get some good matches out of, and which makes you wonder why they all of a sudden decide they're going to book him to lose against Brock Lesnar in the King of the Ring if they're setting him up for this big feud with Eddie Guerrero, which would be, one, a great thing for Eddie, and two, give Austin somebody different to work with beyond the folks that he's worked with for the last three or four years. But walking out's never the answer, at least in any career I can imagine. Once you walk out, you know, going back is not always easy because people seem like you bailed on them. You bailed, and like how they portray him, you bailed on your company, you bailed on your peers, you bailed on your employees, you bailed on your fans. Walking out's never the right first move, but this has been building up for 8 months, so I'm sure there are a lot of conversations that have already been had at this point, and Austin just wasn't having it anymore.
Yeah, he actually did, like, the lesser known one, I think, is that he did walk out right after Mania of this year, and but they kind of got the sense he just needed a week off or something. He was a little bit burned out, and then he would be back. But even Meltzer says here that there's a feeling within them already that this is probably going to be much longer, that it's not just, you know, that this is the true culmination, that he's not going to be back in a week, that it's not just going to blow over that easily. And like you said, Meltzer even says that reportedly, like, Austin was really happy about working with Guerrero and Benoit, so he didn't really have any problems with that sort of stuff, and that he had been having matches with them on house shows, and that he had kind of enjoyed where the matches were going. Because at this point, and this is a good point that Meltzer brings up, and it kind of reminds me of what would happen about a decade later with CM Punk, is he pretty much gets into that Austin doesn't really need this anymore. Like, he's made a ton of money. He could easily retire and just, like, he does this because he feels like it. So, like, he does it because it fulfills him at this point, not because he needs to do it. Obviously, he's physically beat up, so he could really, that alone could be a reason for him to retire. He's had tons of injuries and stuff. But basically, that, like, he doesn't have to put up with this because he doesn't need the job. He's made a ton of money in his run. You know, he's good. He can retire. He obviously could have other opportunities, which he would end up having, you know. So that's part of it, too. He's not financially dependent on this or anything like that.
That is a great point. However, you know, Austin is leading the company, and I think the bigger picture in this is, I think anybody that feels comfortable in their position where I don't need this, I have the right money, and can walk away. But the bigger picture for the other wrestlers that depend on him, and this is where I kind of fall into this a little bit, Austin didn't think about the people he was going to impact in like the Eddies of the world. What was going to happen to Eddie Guerrero after Austin walks away? Eddie's about to get the biggest match of his career. Austin walks out. He walks out on the company that he's made millions for, and they depend on him. So there's a bigger picture here. So it's not just about Austin walking away for him. It's also what he's walking away from and what it does to the actual company. And that's where I think I get a little fuzzy, is he just walked away not thinking about anybody else but himself at this point. But I also think his mental state at this time, that there's no other way he could have done it because he was just done. But it impacted a lot of people, just not him.
Yeah. And Meltzer said, yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm just saying more of an, in a sense that he just has a choice if he wants to walk out. I agree with you. He probably should have just stuck it out this one night and done whatever and been like, look, I'm done. I'm not going to leave y'all like this, you know, but come up with something new because I'm not doing this anymore. But obviously he was in the mindset. And I think he said many times after this, like, you know, in recent years that he kind of regrets the way he did it. Like, basically he still understands why he was upset, but he wishes he would have handled it. Like, wouldn't have been so rash, basically, which, you know, makes sense.
Correct.
He probably shouldn't have just left them like that, if for no other reason that it's going to screw over guys like Eddie and, you know, Benoit, at least at the time. But and so let's get into, and so Meltzer gets into what we're going to see on this Raw, is that basically, so now right before Raw starts, they have to completely scrap the main, you know, what they were planning on doing and trying to figure out some way to, and that's what kind of makes me think that they know he's not coming back anytime soon. That they didn't just try and come up with a stopgap. They kind of blew it up, as we're going to see on this Raw. And so they must have known, like, this is not getting fixed anytime soon.
Yeah, there's no doubt after this watch that this isn't a short-term thing. This is real. So we'll definitely talk about that as we go through this tonight.
Yeah, and so the last Boston situation I thought was interesting is that, and, you know, this is hard to say if this was fact or who said this, but supposedly it's people who had been around Vince. It's one of the only times that they ever seen him like kind of panic a little bit. Like I think the term they use is like he lost his game face. Like usually shit like this can happen and Vince kind of rolls with it and he's always in control. And they said this is one of the few times he like sort of panicked and didn't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah, I would liken this to him probably losing a Hulk Hogan. So let's see, Austin got really big in what, like 98? So let's say 84. So let's say, so we're 2004. So let's say Hogan left. Let's say Hulk Hogan left right when WrestleMania 3 was about to happen against Andre the Giant. That's probably what I would liken this to for McMahon at this point in time, the biggest star in the company. So that's the only other thing I could probably relate it to in terms of how he would probably think about it.
Yeah, and it's the thing is that the business is not, their business has been kind of on the downswing a little bit. They're still very successful. It's not like 1995, like I've been saying on the pod, but it's, you know, it's not quite where it was a year or two ago. Like it's on a downward trend. So you got to imagine that, you know, Vince feels that a little bit. And now his biggest guy's walking out. Rock is pretty much, I mean, they talk about his return here, but his days are numbered. Because he's already proven to be a success in Hollywood. And so you could kind of see why, besides just Austin leaving, there's other factors involved where he's like, man, the two guys that basically made me all this money are both going to be gone. And I'm starting to not make as much money. You know, we have to figure something out.
Yeah, I think that would make me sweat a little bit if I were Vince. So I probably wouldn't blame him.
So the only other news bits we have, and which... would probably be a bigger story if the huge Austin story wasn't going on, is that DDP officially retired at this time. So he had, I forget the exact, I know he had hurt his neck and his back, had always given him issues. And I think he was kind of at the point where it's, you know, he couldn't really go anymore. And also his run in WWE has not been nothing to write home about. It's not like they've given him some huge push or something. So I think he decided probably at this point it wasn't worth it. And so he retired at age 46. So even in 2004, he was 46, man.
So it was quiet too. It was kind of under the radar, but the retirement doesn't last because he actually ends up going over to TNA, which we'll get to eventually on our other pod. But he does retire here, but he's not done yet.
Yeah, he's retired to the Impact Zone, which would be a trend over the next decade or so of people who are supposed to retire and make a quick stop in TNA to see what they could do. And Two other quick notes. CZW on the Indies held its second annual Best of the Best tournament at the old ECW Arena, which got rave reviews. So continuing to see, along with Ring of Honor, kind of the burgeoning indie scene that would kind of get pretty big at this time. And also that Edge, so Edge came out on the last SmackDown and said that pretty much he's going to be out for a long time, but apparently he's not. He's not going to need surgery for his torn labrum, so he's going to miss a few weeks, and he will be back. So probably good for him, because he is obviously getting a big push, so not as bad as they expected. So they at least have that positive going for him right now.
Well, it's good for SmackDown, too, based on what we watched tonight. So he'll be back.
True. Yeah. All right, so that will wrap us up, and we will dive into Raw in Atlanta and see how they're going to adjust to Austin walking out. And so they come right out of the gate with it. So, all right, we have a very long segment to start. Flair comes out to address last week's stipulation, so they're still kind of playing off that he's now going to be Austin's assistant. But then when he gets to the ring, he tells the crowd and the audience that Austin is not there. And then Vince shows up, which is weird. Obviously, everyone, because he's supposed to be a SmackDown exclusive. He is the GM, owner, whatever the hell, of SmackDown. So it's weird that he's there. And so he starts cutting a promo. And like you had mentioned earlier, Sean, they really start laying it out. Like, they're not trying to hide it. I didn't count how many times, but he repeats Austin walked out. He uses that exact terminology multiple times throughout this promo. Yep. Like, really setting it out there. Like, they clearly were not trying to resolve it. They're like, you know, so it was not good from the beginning, because he is just telling the crowd outright that Austin walked out. Not that he's not here or whatever, but he walked out.
Yep. He's a legit angry Vince right now and just shitting all over Austin.
And so he blames it on Flair as owner, saying he's driven Raw into the toilet. He says Flair sucks. And it's weird, too, because it's like you can see the dynamic changing immediately, because now all of a sudden King is completely against Flair. Like, so it, King is like shift. Healing yeah, off on Flair.
Yeah, the shift is so great, because immediately when Vince starts laying into him, it resonates in your head. Oh, my God, they're going to turn Flair face again. And this might be the shortest heel turn in history I've ever seen. It's like immediate clicks in your head.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not subtle, because like I said, so King is already against Flair, and then JR is like defending him, who JR's been, you know, criticizing Flair since he turned heel for the past like month, and all of a sudden he's like, well, give him a break. He's like, it's not his fault Raw's bad or whatever, which already is just so weird. You know, anytime they get into the like that kind of stuff of like, you know, the managers of the show running it down, it's always a weird like... always a weird dynamic when they do that, like talking shit about your own show, even if it's kayfabe. I don't know.
Yep, I agree.
Said he does this for his... Vince says that he does this for his ego, and he can't stand Flair owning half, so he says he's going to gamble his life to get 100% control. And so he proposes a no-holds-barred match for complete ownership of both Raw and SmackDown, the whole company. And Flair accepts, and then I just had that he flares out. So he kind of does a strutting and running around, and it's kind of cool when he runs up to the mic and accepts. And I always like when they do this, because it's almost – I like when they play up that sometimes Flair makes these decisions and he's probably not thinking it through, because he just goes into, like, Flair mode. I always kind of like that.
Yeah, I love crazy Flair, and I actually thought this is a great opener. If you put into context of what they were dealing with here and how they had to pivot and make it happen quickly – how great is it that Vince comes out, calls out Flair for making Raw bad, calls him out. That's why Austin's not here. He blames him for Austin, blames him for Raw being in the tank. And I just thought this was a good way to pivot. And even though we see Flair all of a sudden becoming a face again, I think if you had the book on the fly, knowing that Austin wasn't going to be here, I can't think of a better way they could have pivoted and shifted this whole dynamic. And it seems very sudden to turn Flair face again, but I'll be honest with you, it was great to see Vince. I thought they both did great in the promo, and I think it sets up something really cool that is going to pique the interest and keep people tuned in for the rest of the night.
Yeah, like in a vacuum, like you said, it's well done. If you're thinking about it long term, it can seem a little silly, but dealing with what they're dealing with. I mean, it's Vince, you know. It's like this show, this whole Raw is a good example of him facing like a bad situation. And so he just puts it on himself to kind of put everything on his back and like kind of put this whole show based around him. And sort of he's like, you know what, if Austin walked out, I'm going to carry this show. So he puts this whole angle on him.
And I like the story of it, though. I like this how they weaved him leaving into the story of Flair and destroying Raw. I thought was really unique and really well thought out. That's what I really liked about it, is the story made sense.
Yeah, it's the only weird thing about it is that, you know, in a perfect world where they were doing this just because they wanted to, it would have a lot more built. But
correct.
Yeah, it does make sense. And, you know, it's just weird, too, because it's like they just blew it up with the draft, and now it seems like they're blowing it up again, sort of. But
not by choice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, so that will be our main event and our big angle throughout this entire show. So we'll be back to that later. We cut to Nash and X-Pac backstage. We get weird Big Show's in jeans, which is just an odd image to see. Like, I think he had like almost his wrestling trunks on, but jeans on underneath, which was weird. So Big Show is farting and waiting to take a shit. And so this just continues what we talked about last week, where they're just fascinated with gross shit. Like, they just love it, like farting and vomit. And
well, Vince is legendary. Vince is legendary behind the scenes for his bodily function scenarios. He's a big fan of those. So it's a big Vince thing.
Yeah, apparently maybe the writers must have showed him. He was like, yeah, let's go with that.
Shitting
and puking.
So Big Show, take a shit.
Yeah, because this whole thing is like the NWO waiting to use the bathroom. It's like they're all in line to take a dump. It's very weird.
And when Sean is like Sean in there taking a big dump, it's like they never explain what he's really doing, but that's what you assume, right?
Yeah, because Booker wants to talk to him. Booker wants to talk to HBK. He says he wants to collaborate on the lyrics of his song because he wants his song to be "I'm Just a Booker T." Booker T. So he wants to use Sean's song.
Don't forget, I'm not your is with the song. Oh, I'm not your. So instead of saying I'm a sexy boy, he says I'm not your sucker.
Wonderful. So, so that is the whole the whole thing that happens here. So Booker T wants to talk to Shawn Michaels.
But it was also funny though, because X-Pac and Nash, when he started breaking out in HBK's theme, they legitimately started laughing and broke kayfabe totally because they couldn't contain themselves, and I was the same way.
Yeah,
that was pretty funny.
So they are kind of seeing Shawn Michaels as sort of, since he returned last week, as sort of the, I guess like the 1A to Nash as far as leaders of the NWO, because he's obviously not being positioned as an in-ring competitor, almost like he's going to be their manager. So I guess that's why Booker want to talk to him. It's just the framing of it is odd with them all waiting to use the toilet.
Well, here's the other thing that's odd too, is Shawn's back. We have not yet heard from him, but on his second night back, they're going to build up suspense to him talking by Sean, supposedly taking a shit. So really weird way to bring Sean back, and we've yet to hear from him yet.
Yeah. So so after that, we get a six-man tag, which is going to be the NWO, X-Pac, Big Show, and Booker versus a trio of pretty much the job squad. We have Sean Stasiak, Spike Dudley, and poor, sick, vomiting Tommy Dreamer. And before the match even really gets going, we get a cut to Chris Nowinski, who was in the crowd, who I think he's from Tough Enough Season 1, I want to say, is his background. So they show him in the background. They cut to Sean during the match, but it shows Nash closing the door. So they're trying to build suspense for, like, I guess what Sean's going to do or say. At one point, Dreamer throws confetti at Booker T out of his vomit bucket.
Stupid.
Yeah, so this is essentially like a NWO squash match of the journeyman team, as I called them. So I gave this, a 1 star, which was kind of generous. I did like... Big Show did hit like a huge vertical suplex at one point that looked pretty good, but that's really the only notable spot. Booker won it with the scissors kick, so I went 1 star on this one, Sean.
Yeah, I did go 1 star. And when did Planet Stasiak, has Planet Stasiak always been a face, or is this just a new thing? Because why is he on the face team? I always thought he was a heel.
Yeah, he's weird, where it's like, I mean, his last real thing he did is like Brock whipped his ass, so maybe,
okay,
I don't know.
Well, there
he's
you
like,
go.
He does seem to be a guy that the heels, like, he's weird because I feel like the crowd doesn't really like him, but he's not really a heel. He's just kind of a guy that gets beat up and is stupid. I don't know.
Yeah, he's terrible. But I, you know, there's other stuff in here. I thought there was a good power bomb on Spike by X-Pac. I thought, and there was also a Bronco Buster that he, during a Bronco Buster, he's actually punching, which I thought also looked cool. And I thought X-Pac looked really, and I thought X-Pac and the Giant both looked really good and motivated. So there was some good stuff in it, but it was just more storyline. And then the other thing is interesting to me is Booker comes out to his own entrance. And the way that Booker's acting for me, I can always almost see why the NWO is very sour on him, because he seems very egotistical with himself. It isn't really a team player, so it kind of gives you a reason as to why the NWO is really not a big fan of his and always give him dirty looks and aren't really looking at him as a big team player. It's just the signs are there, and I think, I don't know, Booker doesn't come across as very favorable to me if I remember the NWO.
Yeah, he's definitely not buying into their mantra. Yeah. Their stuff. He doesn't want to use their music or whatever. But who does want to be a member of the NWO? Well, let's see. He says that so Booker runs into Goldust, who calls himself the Undercover Brother. He basically is in his normal attire with a Afro wig on. And so now he's actually jockeying for Booker to quit the NWO. Now that Goldust realizes that they're never going to let him in the NWO, he wants Booker to quit and I guess be partners with him. And Goldust says that if HBK is there, Booker is done. And that basically HBK doesn't like him. So a little bit cryptic, but Goldust is kind of throwing some hints here that Booker might want to quit while he can, because now that HBK is there. And I felt like this was a little bit kind of working some, you know, behind the scenes stuff about how Sean is in real life, you know, that, you know, blah, 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 he politics and all that kind of stuff. They kind of had some shades of that, like, underneath this, I would think.
I agree. It's definitely cool that they're kind of putting that shades of gray in there. I also think it was almost too obvious, like, based on what we see later, Goldust says this, and then we see what we have later. But the other thing I thought was really uncomfortable, and again, why I don't really see why Booker appeals to anyone, he makes the comment to Goldust that, I ain't your kind, and kind of leaves it. And, you know, and we know what that meant when he said it. So, again, for me, it's almost like Booker still coming across as a heel and egotistical. And if I'm Goldust, why would I want to deal with this man when he comes and says to me, I ain't your kind? It's just Booker's weird, man. He's just a weird character at this time.
Yeah. Again, I always go back to it when Aaron was on. He said he's not acting like a human.
No, he's not acting like a human or a face. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah. So we'll see this play out later on. So we get a promo, an interview with Molly Holly. She says that Terry is disgusting. Who is interviewing her says you can almost see her nipples. Trish, to which then Trish approaches her and then starts talking about Molly's ass. Just starts badgering her about how she has a big ass. And I was like, oh no, here we go. Like, I mean, really, like, being kind of cruel to her, like, just saying, like, she has, and it's so weird, because she just keeps repeating it over and over again, like, she's just like, yeah, you have a big ass, yeah, look at that ass, it's so big, like, she just keeps on, and says really nothing else but that.
You know what it reminds me of, like, in this, Molly reminds me of Reese Witherspoon in Cruel Intentions, and Trish is coming across as this Sarah Michelle Gellar and a mean girl. And it's just harsh. And like Trish is supposed to be the face, and her and Terry are just standing there making fun of her and talking about her ass and fat shaming her. And this was weird too. I felt bad for Molly. And honestly, I think Molly's pretty hot. I can't be the only one. And I don't know. I just thought this was mean and cruel and made Trish and just look like an asshole.
Yeah, I think in 2020, it would just be, should be called thick or whatever, and then everybody would move on. And yeah, but like you said, it kind of screws up the face heel dynamic a little bit, because it kind of, so Molly calls her sleazy and crass and kind of challenges her. And then Trish basically says, if you lose, I'll fight you. But if you lose, you have to wrestle in a thong, and then kind of shows her own thong, which obviously gets a big pop from the crowd. But yeah, I find it just kind of makes Trish seem lame, because I feel like the feud already has, you know, the basis of it is already there. And like you say, you're not doing Trish favors, because she shouldn't react this way. It should be like that Molly is like badgering her for the way she is. And Trish's whole thing should be like, look, I'm proud of who I am. This is who I am.
Yeah.
But when you start having her be cruel, it kind of, like, I don't know if Molly's done enough to warrant that. And it kind of just makes, I don't know, it's a weird dynamic.
Yeah, and you brought it up earlier. I did enjoy Molly giving Terry hell about her credibility as a journalist. And again, you brought it up. All she does is she's nipples and does a raw sex column. How does that make you a journalist? So there's some really good stuff here. But yeah, it's like Trish is the heel here, and Molly's really the face. So again, another interesting dynamic. And I think you made up a good point that Trish should be like, yes, I look the way I am, but I'm proud of what I do and I work really hard. But no, she just goes the fat shaming route and all bets are off.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit her character. And you can almost, I feel like, I mean, I'm reading into this, but I feel like Trish, like, as a person having to deliver this, she sounded kind of awkward. Like, she almost seemed uncomfortable, like unnatural having to deliver that line. Like, it didn't seem like something that she as a person would say. And she just, it came off as a little awkward when she said it. Like, it, like, unnatural, you know?
Yep, very unnatural.
Yeah, so not the greatest turn there. I just, that angle baffles me because they start and stop with it and then they feel the need to do dumb shit like this instead of just letting it be.
And it's
what
a ready
it is.
Made feud. I mean, it's ready made. You got both ends of the coin, you know, the good girl, the sex pod who works hard and is a great wrestler. You have a ready made story. You don't need to do this kind of stuff.
It's like they got to add like some weird meme to it. You know what I mean? Like they have to have some weird, like, turn, you know what I'm saying, like some little catchphrase, like her calling her, saying she has a big ass. It's just
yep, I agree.
Anyway, all right, carrying on. So we get Eddie and Benoit upset with Flair for putting everything on the line. Really not a lot to this. It's just like them upset that Flair is going to put them at risk because they're basically aligned with Flair loses power. They kind of lose power.
But it's also the first sign that you kind of get a glimpse that, okay, Flair is going to go face here, and you know, there's no Austin, and they have Eddie and Chris giving them hell. So it kind of gives you a peek under the tent of where they might possibly go with this. So they're just basically going to sub Flair for Austin. That's the first thing I thought when I initially watched this when it happened back in the original air. So,
yeah, that does make sense. I even think about that. But, yeah, that does make sense. That they, it's like distancing him from the heels immediately.
Yep.
All right. Next up, we get a pretty cool match on paper. William Regal, who is still our European champion, I believe, allegedly, versus Bradshaw, who is our hardcore champion. More about the story. Do we get more about the story of Nowinski, that he's a Harvard grad and that kind of stuff on commentary? And so finally, they kind of work for just a couple minutes, and then Regal goes to Nowinski, gets the Nux, and kind of uses the Nux to win. It kind of did what you would expect a match between these two, like in the first 2 minutes, but they kind of cut it off for the angle with the Nux. I would have star on it. I mean, it kind of seemed like the first, you know, the warm-up period of a real match between these two before the angle with the Nux came in.
This match really makes me angry. So on my previous ones I've been on with you, I really talked about how much I was enjoying Bradshaw and the possibility. And now here we are. He's the hardcore champion, which I think last time I was on, I think it was Bubba. And now he's stuck in the hardcore division, and he's facing Regal. And on paper, this should be like a great stiff fight between two hosses. And it's like on paper, you would think this would be great. But it's obvious that Bradshaw's push is gone at this point. The other note I made is that knee to the side of the head that Regal does looks really, really vicious. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the best spot of the match. And why are we sacrificing Bradshaw for Nowinski? Why couldn't we have some like Spike? Why couldn't you just throw Spike in here and have Spike? Like, I don't understand why they're doing this with Bradshaw. So somewhere along the way, they lost interest in Bradshaw, and that's a shame because he was one of the highlights for me when you first started this podcast.
Yeah, and it's just them week to week just doing stuff and then kind of moving on to something else. Like, you would think after last week or you know, in the past couple weeks, he wins the hardcore title. You think maybe they'd roll with that for a while and let him almost like dominate the hardcore division and just beat, like, brawl and beat the shit out of people with weapons and stuff. But now it's like he's pivoted to something that doesn't even have anything to do with that. Like, yep, within a couple of weeks, it's like they don't know what they want to do, which is kind of the theme of it's a running theme through these.
And I went one star on this as well.
Yeah, but I'm hoping, I don't remember, but I would love to see like a real like 10-15 minute match between them.
Absolutely.
All right, so now we get the Trish and Molly match. So set up a moment ago, And even the camera, like when Molly comes out, they're like doing the close-ups of her butt. And I'm like, oh my God, what are we doing?
Right out of the gate. Yeah, the minute she climbs into the ring, the camera's right on her ass. Yep.
Yeah. So like immediately they've just made this the complete basis of the feud. Nothing else matters but Molly having a big ass. But JR has a good line. He says, so King is like losing his mind. Just tons of cringy King comments. But JR sneaks in where he says about Molly's ass. He says, you know, me saying somebody has a big ass is definitely the pot calling the kettle black, which I thought was fun.
Or the comparing her ass to Rikishi, too. I mean, we're really comparing her ass to Rikishi at this point.
It's absurd.
It's so absurd.
Yeah. So they kind of do their normal kind of feeling out period until finally Molly scores the upset with a pretty cool looking. I wasn't really sure what they call it. It's kind of like she does a senton, but kind of lands, of course, on her ass and kind of falls into Trish and does sort of a roll up, which was a pretty good looking move.
Yeah, it's if you ever watched Doink the Clown, Doink had the move called the whoopee cushion where they would lay on the ground and jump on them. This was the same thing, except they're standing up and she turned it into a pin and it looked really, really cool.
Yeah, it was a pretty good move. But of course, the emphasis is because she's doing that because, you know, and King is just losing his mind. Like, no one can get up from that, up from under that, you know.
Well, I thought it was a fairly decent match. I thought Molly looked really good. She did a backflip elbow, which looked really good. King was very annoying, to your point, talking about the big ass the whole time. Molly finisher, like you talked about, was really, really awesome. And I was very happy Molly won this. I actually wrote in my notes, all the girls that were called fat their whole lives or in high school should be happy that Molly's choking Trish out. So I actually went 2 stars. I thought the match was pretty decent. It was all because of Molly.
Yeah, I went 1.5 stars. It was a decent little match. It's, you know, if you can separate all the lame comments on commentary, you're hanging over the feud. And my only issue is, which is not on the match, it's just like they set this up 10 minutes ago, and I feel like this step could have had a little bit more build to it to make it seem a little bit more believable, you know, that Molly was going to lose. And, you know, just to build up the stakes a little bit. But, you know, that's not their forte right now. They're just kind of running through stuff. But like you kind of alluded to, we get the post-match sort of angle where she takes the panties that they had from last week and kind of chokes Trish out with it, which is a pretty good. Like, that's what they would need to show more. Like, that's what it should be about, you know. Because the thing is now you make Molly seem like almost justified in doing it. Where she would just done it anyway, then she really comes off as a heel, like an evil heel. But now it's almost like you're like, well, I know why you do it, Molly. I'd be pissed off too.
Yep. I don't blame Molly one bit for this. And again, she's the face and Trish is the heel here. And I'm glad Molly won.
Yeah. Like if you just have her do that as like her way of being like, oh, well, look, you know, because, you know, you're so crude. So I'm going to choke you with your panties. You know, it's like they're shooting themselves in the foot.
Yep. I agree.
All right. Carrying on. We get one of your faves, Sean. Arn Anderson is in the back trying to reason with Vince that this is a bad idea to risk everything. Arn tells Vince that there's no way that he can beat Flair in a match. And Vince says he takes calculated risks and then he pushes Arn away. So just to build the main event.
I really enjoyed this. I mean, you know, I have a self-professed love for Arn Anderson, and I thought Vince showed some good balls pushing Arn away. I really like this. And I also like Vince when he's wearing pants because they're all the way up to his moobs, and his arms look extra long when he has those pants all the way up to his chest. So I really enjoyed this segment probably more than most people because I just thought it was a great dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah, for sure. But I definitely knew about – I saw the pants, too. Like, it reminds me like he would be in, like, Greg Gatsby or something. Like,
yes.
All right. Anyway, we have a King of the Ring qualifier match, which one of – it seems like we've had, like, 15 before tonight, and we're going to continue to have a bunch. So we get RVD versus Eddie, just another match between these two in their ongoing series of matches. Last one, of course, was the big ladder match. We get lots of back and forth to start. Typical, like, impressive offense from both guys kind of just getting their shit in. We get – I thought this was a weird spot to bust out in the middle of the match, but Eddie kind of hits the 5-star off the apron onto RVD on the floor, which I thought was kind of a weird spot in the middle of the match, and they kind of just continue working the match. Like, it didn't really lead to much of anything or, you know – And so this kind of allows Eddie to start You know, like Eddie just takes advantage right after this. Like it doesn't even really lead to an RVD advantage because Eddie starts working him over. He kind of starts working the arm. We get a few hope spots from RVD. Then Eddie hits a superplex, still pretty vicious. And then we get RVD uses a springboard moonsault to kind of out of a roll to kind of like change the momentum. I thought that was a cool spot. I always like when they have like these, you know, creative spots to kind of swing the match back to somebody. And then finally RVD reverses and, hits a roll for the win. Like, I think it's like they did like a double reverse spot in the end. It was kind of weird to see this as a regular match after everything we've seen from them with the ladder match and everything. But they're always good for a pretty solid effort. This was kind of like the abbreviated version of some of their other matches. But it was as good as you expect from these two. And there were some cool sequences. I like the finish. Like I said, I like the springboard kind of moonsault out of the roll by RVD. So I went 2¾ on this one, Sean.
Yeah, I agree with you. I won't go if you covered all the good parts of the match, and I also, and you know, again, we've seen this match multiple times. I thought it was weird that RVD as the Intercontinental Champion was in the King of the Ring tournament. And if he was in a qualifying match, I wasn't quite sure why they didn't put Eddie over here. And I guess we'll figure that out down the line, because I feel like Eddie should have gone over, because Van Damme, I think, has won their last one or two matches. He's already the champion. And then they were setting Eddie up to be in a feud with Austin. So even though Austin's gone, I still thought Eddie would be positioned in a way that he would be a challenger for Austin. And him losing here didn't make a lot of sense to me. I almost feel like they could have figured out a way to book Eddie into the tournament without him losing RVD, if that makes sense. Because I don't think you need your Intercontinental Champion in the tournament, which we know he is. And I felt this should have been a good shine spot for Eddie to get into this tournament. That's personally how I felt.
Yeah, we'll get a bunch more on SmackDown. We're going to get some on this show, and then we're going to get more on SmackDown. But I feel like as far as the King of the Ring, it's like I think they have one thing they know about King of the Ring. It's who they want to win it, and everything else, I think they're just like throwing stuff out there. And like any match, they just throw it out there. Like, oh, look, it's King of the Ring qualifier. Here you go. Like, I don't know how much thought they're putting into the actual tournament and setting it up.
Well, I don't think they have. I think they were trying to get out of the Austin situation in the tournament. They were just booking on the fly at this point, probably.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we go backstage. Coach tries to get a word with Nash, but to no avail. So they continue to duck any interviewers. Undertaker now is going to come out for a promo. He keeps emphasizing that he wants respect. He says Triple H is supposed to be smart, but why didn't he know that Taker was waiting to jump him last week? He addresses Jeff Hardy. He's pissed off that he got kicked into the puke, and he says that he will slap him around like the bitch that he is. And if you have to, he says, if you come out here and take your ass kicking, basically, I'll take it easy on you. I'll slap you around like a bitch. But if I have to come and find you, you're going to regret it, because then I'm really going to hurt you. Hardy to come out, who comes out with a ladder, which kind of gets Taker's attention. And Matt says that he disrespected Matt. Not only he didn't just disrespect Jeff, he disrespected him when he beat him down the locker room. So as he's distracted by Taker's distracted by Matt, Jeff sneaks up behind him and tries to attack Taker, but he just ends up beating a choke slam. Matt gets in a few shots as he runs down to the ring, but then Taker beats him up too, until finally Jeff comes out and takes his knee out when he's going to give the last ride to Matt. And then they actually do a spot where Jeff does a leg drop over the table, I think it was. And it picked up whenever Jeff showed up to me. Like the Taker promo was kind of, you know, going on like Taker does at times, where he'll just kind of start rambling. But I did like all the interactions with the Hardys. I liked how it was a nice symmetry to have, you know, Taker's shitting on Triple H, calling him stupid for not knowing someone was going to sneak up on him, and then somebody sneaks up on him, but then Taker does kind of cut off the sneak attack, which I thought was a nice little touch. But yeah, this was pretty fun for what it does. This is a much better way to build Taker as a bully kind of character than beating up puking Tommy Dreamer.
I agree. I've said it before. I like this version of Taker. The one thing I don't like is I don't like the world title at this point, because I think it looks really goofy. And seeing Taker wear it, it doesn't look weird. It looks like there's something with the symmetry of it and how it looks. I've never been a fan of this particular world title belt. The other thing I thought was weird is I really enjoyed this with the Hardys and Taker. I thought it was a lot of fun. And it's almost like we're back to the same feud we had when the Hardys were facing off with Brock Lesnar. And I know we really enjoyed that feud too, and we thought the Hardys got a lot of shine, but they're a tag team. But now they're a tag team. Now they're both feuding with the world champion. And, you know, you got Taker feuding with Triple H on SmackDown. Now he's feuding with the Hardys on Raw. It's just such an interesting dynamic, and it just shows how dead the tag team division is, that all you can do for the Hardys is find a way to keep them in a feud with singles guys because there's no tag team matches for them. So it's okay, and I'm fine with it. I think the other problem I have is we all know what Jeff Hardy's issues are at the time, and I'm sure you're going to talk about what happens next here shortly. That just shows how drug-riddled he is, and they're still booking him. But it's fun. It's good, but it reminds me a lot of the Brock feud, which is okay because that was a lot of fun too.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's weird to have, you know, pretty much your top tag team and they don't have tag matches. They just feud with like monster heels, which is, yeah, odd. It would be like if the Rockers just had a feud with Earthquake.
Yeah. But if they've looked good in it, and that's what's important. I think they've looked really strong in these feuds.
Yeah. I think one issue with Taker, too, now that you mention it with the. With the belt, is I really don't like his gear. I think his gear looks shitty.
Maybe it's the gear doesn't make it. I mean, I like the character, but you might be right about the gear.
Yeah, he has like these vinyl pants, and he has like a shitty like black tank top thing. He's not in the greatest shape as far as wrestlers go. So it's
kind of just looks... the belt doesn't look right because he's fat, Jake.
Could be. I just think the whole package is just not, you know. I think it, like, he doesn't, like, to your point, he just doesn't look like when he comes out like a champion, you know?
Yeah, he's just like a dude and some champion. Yeah, that's what it is. You're probably right. Absolutely.
Yeah, like, I think his character is okay for it, but his presentation is just not, he doesn't feel, like, you know, he just looks like he put those, like, vinyl pants on and waddled out there.
Yeah, you made a good point. I think you're probably right. So it's not the belt, it's Taker's gear and his gut.
Yeah. All right. So we head backstage. Regal is caught leaving the arena with his accomplice, Chris Nowinski. Regal puts him over for his Harvard cred, saying that basically like he's a gentleman, educated man. And then, as you mentioned, Sean, Jeff Hardy runs out of nowhere and says, "The blank remains unfilled." And then then runs off. And JR calls him goofier than a pet coon. And then he gets in a car and just takes off. I guess running from the Undertaker. So,
like, if this wasn't like there wasn't a camera there and this just randomly happened, I would believe that Jeff Hardy was definitely on drugs and did this just for no reason. But this had to be booked, I imagine. But boy, man, he's just out there. This is pretty funny.
Blank remains unfilled. I had to like go back a couple of times to figure out what the hell he was saying.
I'm glad you figured it out, because I tried to look at it 5 times and never figured out exactly what he said.
Well, let's put it this way. That's what the subtitle said. That's what the caption said. So they might be wrong too. Maybe only Jeff knows. And even he probably doesn't. So
at this time he probably didn't know what he said.
All right. Anyway, we have another King of the Ring qualifying match. That is the next in a series, and that's Bubba Ray Dudley versus Brock.
Your favorite wrestler. Like,
of course. Kind of become sort of a mini feud at this point. They face each other one-on-one and in tag matches. So this I found was worked similar. So this is my issue with this. It's worked similar to how you see most matches on Raw, like most of the way they do these TV matches, where it's a lot of back and forth. You know, one guy hits some moves, the other guy hits some moves, sort of bang, 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 which I didn't think that's how this should be done. For a match like that, it was fine. They did some cool moves. You know, Brock did some stuff. You know, Bubba, as much as I don't like his character and all, it's not like he can't wrestle. I don't think he's a horrible wrestler or anything. So they do some good moves. But my problem with this is, like I said, it was worked like a typical back and forth competitive, you know, normal Raw match. What I don't think that's what it should have been. I feel like it should be Bubba kind of fighting for his life or something to make Brock seem unique, because at first they had booked him to where he seemed unique. He seems like a monster. And I really think, and you know, I'm trying to look at this if I are just watching, I don't know how this goes, but I feel like when they do matches like this, you put him in danger of just ending up being another just big muscled up guy with really nothing that makes him special. So, like, it was a solid match for what it was. I just don't understand why you're putting Brock in matches where he just works a typical style of match that everybody else is doing, pretty much, like, back and forth.
Yeah, so Bubba
star gets, and a half on it.
Yeah, Bubba gets too much offense. But, again, the match isn't terrible. I enjoy when JR calls Heyman the pimple on the ass of life. That's always funny. Bubba gets way too much offense. There was a great overhead suplex on the floor that I thought looked really good by Brock. But, you know, here's the thing, and I know we don't talk fantasy booking, and I talked earlier about Bradshaw. Imagine if we had Bradshaw here versus Brock, what a freaking stiff fest that could have been. Mm-hmm. Throw Bubba back in the hardcore division, and this is a spot where you should have had Bradshaw. Or have Bradshaw in the King of the Ring, and he could be in the semifinal. Like, I feel like this is a prime opportunity where they missed the boat with Bradshaw, and they have Bubba. And by the way, this supposedly also would have been a match that Austin would have been in that he would have lost, right? I believe. So
yeah, that would make sense, yeah.
Yeah, so we get Bubba instead, and I don't know. I'm still ranting about Bradshaw because I feel like they missed the boat, and I feel like they missed a prime opportunity to really have a great showcase for him and Brock, and we get this Bubba bullshit. But it's not a bad match. I actually went 2 stars. I thought it was a solid, decent match, just the wrong guy in it with Brock.
Yeah, it's just, you know, he's going to lose anyway. Why does he need to, you know, why does it need to be so back and forth? Like, why do we need Heyman hitting Bubba, you know? Like, you don't really need that kind of stuff. It just, to me, it's like you've done a good job of already building Brock as something, like he's special. Like, when he comes out for a match, you know it's going to be, you know, a little bit different that he's this, like, dominant monster. And now if you keep putting in matches like this, I think you might take that away. You run the risk.
I agree.
All right. We get another recap of the Flair Vince stuff because they're continuing their classic style of like when they have a big angle on TV, they always build it up and build it up throughout the show. Heyman comes in to talk to Vince and tells him to start a big thing. Obviously talking about Brock Lesnar and encourages him and says that he is an idea for King of the Ring. So possibly hinting at some connection between Vince and Heyman.
Yep, pretty good. It's short, simple, to the point. I liked it.
Yep. We carry on. We get a clip of Rock saying that he's going to be returning soon, which is kind of a big deal. And it got into my head. I was like, yeah, he's been missed. Because I thought back to I haven't talked about much on the pod because he's on the first few episodes after the brand split. And then he kind of went off to Hollywood for a little while. But he is definitely missed because I remember he was kind of a highlight of some of those early when I first started doing the pod. So mm-hmm. It'll be nice to have him back.
Absolutely. Even if for a short time, it'll be nice to have him back.
Yeah. So finally, we get our semi-main event segment, which is HBK coming out for his first promo since returning, because last week he came out, but he didn't say anything. And I just couldn't help but think that, like, the symmetry, like, the first promo he comes to cut is on the night that Austin walks out. It's just, you know, given, like, you think of WrestleMania 14 as, like, when Austin truly elevated to, like, you know, became champion right as, right as Shawn's leaving, and now right as Austin's kind of moving out of the picture, now, you know, Shawn's coming back. It's just so interesting.
Yeah, that's, you know what? I didn't even think about that. That's a really great point. It's almost like they've gone guardrail to guardrail. Now Shawn's back, Austin's gone, and they flip-flop. So that's really interesting. I didn't think about that. That's a really good point, Jake.
Yeah, just the way that it's the same thing with Rock, honestly, pretty much. How Shawn's like his peak, you know what I mean? And his hiatus just completely dodged both of their like primes. It's so weird.
Yep.
But anyway, so he calls back to 1995, said that when he was, you know, when he was around before they had clowns and garbage men, but he was real. He was added to before it was a catchphrase. And he said, whenever he left, they put the machine behind Stone Cold, and Stone Cold stole the spotlight. He says he's not here to wrestle, but rest assured he won't. We'll see. He blames the fans, said the fans killed HBK, but there was always one person who stood by him, and that was Kevin Nash. NWO comes out, and Shawn puts Nash and NWO over, but he says something's missing. And so basically, he goes through each member of the NWO. At first, he calls out X-Pac. Says X-Pac's not always focused, but then basically he says he's great. Then he goes to talks about Big Show. He really puts over Big Show. He says that Big Show is like a monster who's going to mess with NWO when they have this monster. And then kind of out of nowhere, he says, which leads me to, and then he super kicks Booker out of nowhere, basically kicking him out of the NWO, no pun intended. I thought the super kick was super well done, the way they shot it. He hit it really suddenly, even if they had kind of choreographed it a little bit in the show, earlier in the show, like telegraphed that this was going to happen. I still thought it was really well done how he did it so suddenly and the way he went through every person. His promo before that was kind of interesting. You know, he's kind of doing a heel, almost like DX Shawn sort of thing, where he's kind of doing semi-shoot stuff. But I did like that it established him as a factor, you know, that his first promo and he's kicking somebody at the NWO. But the crowd dynamic's a little weird, like we talked about in the last one, because he's positioned as a big heel, but then you have one of their biggest guys ever coming back. You know, the crowd probably naturally wants to be on his side and cheer him a little bit, but then he's a big heel right now, so it's kind of weird. What did you think about all his Stone Cold stuff? I felt that was kind of like work shoot stuff. I feel like they knew what they were doing with
it,
that.
It was, but here's the thing. I remember when Sean first came back, and the first time I heard his music, how much I missed this song and how much I missed him. And I think you and Steven on the last podcast talked about what great shape he was in. Like, he looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't look this great when he was wrestling. I liked the promo. I thought it made sense. I think the pairing with Nash made perfect sense based on their history. You know, Big Daddy Cool Diesel was his bodyguard, and they were partners, and they have a history there. I love, like you said, that they went from person to person, and I love the super kick out of nowhere on Booker. That popped me immediately. I thought it was really well done. And you know what? Like I said earlier, Booker was so full of himself and egotistical, and it wasn't a team player, and he was like the square peg that didn't fit in the circle. Made perfect sense for Sean to kick him out of the blue to send a message. And I thought Sean added instant cred back to the NWO that they have desperately needed since they've actually come back to the company. And unfortunately, he probably didn't need the NWO name, but Sean gives him some instant credibility. And I really, really liked this segment quite a bit, actually. So I thought it was very good.
Yeah, I thought it was very engaging for a long promo, because I think Sean is guilty of this as much as anybody. When he does do these long promos, he can get very rambly. But I felt like everything he said, I was like listening. And I guess maybe it's because, you know, it's his first promo back. I'm expecting him to say something, you know, significant. But he had me hooked. Like, I wanted to listen to everything he was saying. Like, none of it sounded so generic that I could check out, you know. Like, I wanted to hear what he was going to say about each guy, which is good.
You know? Yeah. It was good. I thought it was a good segment for the NWO and Sean and Booker, because now this will set him on a different trajectory, so we get to see how that plays out in the future.
Yeah. So the NWO continues to be on life support. So they're trying their best to make him matter. So.
Yep. They got a little shot in the arm tonight.
All right. Which leads us to our big main event, Vince McMahon versus Ric Flair. The winner will get 100% control of the company in both shows. Vince comes out and he's jacked as always. Just I never get used to seeing Vince. Like, when you haven't seen him, like, without, you know, like in his tank top and his black Levi's in a while, it always is jarring to me when you see just how fucking jacked he is.
You can say jarring, mesmerizing, but it's like an Adonis when he walks out. The way he walks and the way he carries himself, it's mesmerizing almost, to your point.
Yeah, because like you mentioned earlier, like 30 minutes ago, we just saw him in his, like, you know, with his slacks hiked up to his nipples, and now he comes out and he's like, you know what I mean?
He's a polarizing figure. He's just a polarizing individual. There's no way around it.
Yeah. And maybe not to the level of Vince, but I said this when he had the Austin match. Flair's in great shape here, too. Like, Flair has kind of a, like, you can see some abs going on Flair right here, which is interesting, because I feel like, even like 10 years ago, like in the 90s, I don't know if you would have seen him with much as far as like defined abs.
Well, just back in when WCW went out of business in his final match with Sting, he was wearing a shirt in his final match because he was embarrassed of his body. Mm-hmm. So from go to that to this and where he's at now, I agree with you. I thought he looked fantastic.
Yeah, it looks good. So we start off, they do kind of a lot of brawling through the crowd. Vince busts Flair open with the ring bell when they make their way back to ringside, which allows Vince to beat up Flair for a while, which is kind of a long heat segment on Flair after he hits him with the bell. And I mean,
And it this looked good. Like, the bell shot looked really good, too. That was a brutal bell shot. It looked really good. Yeah.
Savage blade drop, too. Like, yep. Flair is bleeding. Like, it was a typical, like, gusher Flair blade job. And so he beats up Flair for a while. And like I said, the heat segment's pretty long with Vince just working Flair over. And then Flair finally starts to work his comeback. He does his, you know, standard go after the knee, you know, his, you know, shoulder tackle deal through the knee, into the knee and all that kind of stuff. And when eventually Arn walks down, and so Arn, so they almost like make you think that Arn might turn or something. Because the way this is, it seems all so sudden that you just never know what the hell they're going to do.
I actually had that in my notes, too. Yeah, I actually thought Arn was good. And when I was watching this live, I actually thought Arn was going to turn back. And when we watched it for the when I watched it for the first time, that's exactly where I thought they were going.
Yeah, because it's like, would that make sense? Probably not. But I don't even know if they care what makes sense right now. They're just trying to do something to make it seem like something's happening. So Arn walks down, but instead he kind of just cheers on Flair. Flair locks in the figure four. And so we think Vince is going to tap. But here comes Brock Lesnar to the ring. And he goes after Flair, and I think Arn just bailed, right? I don't even know if Arn got hit. I think he just ran away. Are you guys...
Arn made a great, what I put, shit himself face. So he looked up and saw Brock, and he looked like he shit his pants, and then he got the hell out.
I love that moment. Yeah, he didn't even attempt to help him. He just bailed.
Nope, bailed.
Yeah, and so then... yeah, Lesnar just takes it to Flair, which then allows Vince to win, seemingly aligning Brock Lesnar with Vince, like was maybe alluded to earlier when Heyman was talking to him. So this match, it was kind of like an abbreviated version of like your typical Vince Wild Brawl kind of match, which is usually pretty entertaining.
It was like an abbreviated version of the Royal Rumble match that they had. It's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when they have stuff, you know, they're just throwing this all together. It was, like I said, in these matches, you're tanking. I would 2.5 on it. It was a good wild Vince brawl, which I'm always kind of down for.
I went 3 stars. I thought this match was, I absolutely love this match. And I love the opening brawl. I love the chops. I thought the chops were great. I call it a great grandpa fight. Flair was laying in the chops, McMahon. And here's the thing with McMahon. I think when we were doing some of the group watches back when COVID started, one of the things we did was do a bunch of Vince McMahon watches, not Vince's match. How many matches have we watched that Vince has been really bad in? Like, Vince always brings it to these matches and always looks really, really good. And I thought he looked great in this. I think he got a little too much offense on Flair, but that's okay. But I thought they laid into each other. And again, Arn, the face Arn made when Brock came out was classic stuff to me. And then him bailing on Flair was so funny because that's his best friend. But he's like, I ain't dealing with this guy. You fed for yourself. I don't care what you're losing. He left. So I really liked it. I thought it was a good stiff train wreck stiff fight. I went 3 stars. I thought it was great.
Yeah, he's good at this. Like I said, this is like the TV version of that. You know, it didn't quite get to the levels of like the craziest ones, but it's like what he lacks in actually being able to wrestle, he just makes up for with his facial expressions and the way he gets over emotion and in a match. And he brings this kind of weird intensity to everything. And like, he uses all that to kind of make for his obvious shortcomings.
And he turns so red, like his face turns red. He gets all veiny. His head gets veiny. He plays the Vince McMahon part. That's because it really is him. He's always said it's a larger version of who he really is, and he has it nailed. I don't think there's a better character in wrestling than Vince McMahon in this role. He's amazing.
Yeah. What do you think about him aligning with Brock? Does that seem kind of random to you?
I think it's random, but I also think it just sets the course for something different. It also, and I, what I also think it does is it propels Brock into a main event level perception, because now that he's aligned with Vince, he seems more main event. You know, recently he's been feuding with what, the Hardys and Bubba. Now you see him aligned with Vince, and he immediately propels him to a bigger level thought process of a main event. So is it random? Yes, but I also think they're taking the opportunity to give him the nudge upward. Austin's gone. Let's try to nudge our new talent up. And I think that's what they did. And I thought they were very successful with it.
Yeah. I'm conflicted because I see it that way, but then I'm also like, I sort of would like to see Brock, you know, sow his oats without needing to be like, it just worries me of like, anytime somebody's getting big, you have to be aligned with the McMahons in some way. And I think it kind
of... But unfortunately, at this time, that's kind of the way it is. So if that's the way it is, make sure it's the right guy you're doing it with. And I think that's they did it right with Brock.
Yeah, we'll see. But that wraps us up on for Raw. So obviously, this show was really built around the whole match. I would say the big match and Sean's promo. Everything else was what I would consider pretty much filler. But the big match, I think, did deliver. And like you mentioned, Sean, it was them trying to throw it together. So I went 5 out of 10. I couldn't go too high on it because there's a lot of junk on here or just kind of throwaway forgettable stuff. But the main event match was good. It was a pretty solid angle that they threw together. And the Sean promo was pretty cool.
So I actually went a little higher than you. I actually went 6 out of 10 because based on what they were dealing with, like this could have just been a total shit show of a Raw. And they came out with a good storyline reason why Austin left. Vince came out, saved the day, got in it with Flair. And I thought they made – here's what you say. They made chicken shit – they made chicken salad out of chicken shit is what they did here. Mm-hmm. I thought RVD and Eddie was solid as always. I thought the NWO angle was pretty good. I thought the main event was good. I have to give it 6 out of 10. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I thoroughly enjoyed watching this show.
Yeah, I just felt like it bogged down at points. Like it's, I feel like you could sort of tell just in the way the show flowed that they were kind of that they had to redo it. But
knowing what they had to do, 6 hours, they had 6 hours notice in the show they put together. Think about them trying to put a show like that together now. Like you hear now, like Legendary, they take an hour before showtime to put shows together, and most of the time they're a train wreck. Here, at least they did a fluid storyline and had some good stuff in it. So is it really a 6 out of 10 based on what it could have been? Probably not, but based on the circumstance, to me it is.
All right. I'll go with it. So we'll move on to SmackDown, June 13, 2002, live from Greenville, South Carolina, which I think took them a while to say. Like, I didn't catch it until about halfway through the show they mentioned it. All right, here we go. So Vince comes out again to open this show. He's out strutting and gloating because he just won that match against Flair on Raw. The ring is filled with security, and there's a table in the middle, seemingly for some kind of contract signing. He stands on the table and congratulates himself. The crowd is into it, actually. Like, he's healing off, but in a perfect – this is how you know, like, he knows exactly what he's doing because he notices the crowd's getting into it, and so he just starts shitting on them. He says, the filthy rich know their responsibility to the less fortunate like yourselves. And they all need a distraction from their miserable existence, which I thought was an amazing line. Like, it's like he knows he's supposed to be a heel, and the crowd's starting to cheer him, so he just craps all over him.
Yep. That's
great. Great. Their miserable existence. Amazing. So he brings out Taker and Triple H for a contract signing for the title match. Triple H throws a chair, lies in the ring. So they kind of just sign, have a stare down, and I kind of thought, wow, are they actually like not going to beat each other up? Is they going to kind of go opposite of what you usually expect from these things, just have a stare down and walk away and wait to lay hands until the show? But no. Security holds Triple H, and that allows Taker to kind of unload and get some cheap shots in. I made another note that we talked about earlier that I just hate Taker's gear. I think it showed even, you know, like in this, you know, a contract signing, you know, the album would come out and his little tank top deal, like, you know, your dad without a shirt on. So Triple H is pissed off. He goes and gets the sledgehammer into the ring. He refuses to leave until he gets Taker. So this is at the point where, Triple H is starting to take over the show, quote unquote. He beats up the security. So at this point, I wasn't really sure if this was going to be the end of the segment. At first, I was a little excited that they were going to not. I was kind of hoping they weren't going to beat each other up or nobody's going to fight or flip the table and kind of do the typical thing. But that's kind of where they went. So it kind of just ended up being, at this point, you know, your typical, you know, contract signing going awry, which is fine. So what did you think so far? Did you think this was going to continue on?
No. So I made a few notes early on. So the first note I made is about the security. They were very intimidating. A lot of them had pot bellies. Some of them were missing their hair, were like 80 years old. I put gloating, you brought it up. I put gloating Vince rules and standing on the table. I was popping. I was popping so big for Vince in this segment. He was so good. There was a guard with red hair. And he looked like he was a impoverished Hardy Boy, is what I called him. And I said all these security guards were trainees from the Greenville Wrestling Association. So they were all dressed as guards. I didn't think it was going to continue. I said he beat up the Greenville Wrestling Association top five wrestlers. And yeah, so no, I thought it was going to end, and I'll let you keep going. It did not end.
Yeah, the Greenville Elite Guard. Yeah,
the Greenville Elite Guard, the Greenville Wrestling Association trainees, whatever you want to call them.
All right, so you think you're getting just a typical, you know, contract sign that ends in a throwdown. So Billy and Chuck show up, but Triple H is still in the ring. They want to have their match, and he tells them leave so they can have their match. Then Triple H tells Billy and his partner that they have found a new meaning to the word suck it, which is kind of a cringy line.
Well, he is king of the innuendo promos. We all know that about Triple H. Yes.
King of the homophobic promos here.
Well, that too. Yes.
Yeah. But he says if they come to the ring, they'll suck on his sledgehammer, which was a very strange line.
Jesus Christ.
And then he hits the sledgehammer into a chair. So at this point, it's becoming clear that this is like right out of the Austin, like 98, 99 playbook of like, you know, like this is just something they would have done with Austin. Like he's taking over the show. He's pissed off. He's going to take over the show. And so that's kind of what they're trying to do with Triple H. Like he's going to sit in the ring with a sledgehammer until he gets his hands on Undertaker. And he's not going to let anybody have a match until, you know, until he gets it. So he threatens to destroy everything. And so the first issue with this is so he goes outside and starts hitting the announce table with the sledgehammer. But that announce table is sturdy as shit because he is beating the fuck out of it. Yeah. And like it really is not showing a ton of damage, which you would think they put guys through this all the time. It looks like it's made out of like particle board. But then he's hitting with a sledgehammer. He breaks the first sledgehammer.
Yep.
And, like, he breaks the sledgehammer. The table doesn't even look in that bad of shape. So, all right. Any thoughts so far, Sean?
No, keep going. You're describing it great. Okay. Nothing else to add right now.
So, luckily, he must have planned for this because he has another sledgehammer underneath the ring. Mm-hmm. At one point, there's a guy in the crowd, I guess, because the when he's outside the ring by the camera's really close to that cloud, but you just hear some guy like a South Carolina accent go like, "Yeah, swing that bitch, son," as he's swinging the sledgehammer. And so his big threat here, so he ends up just flipping the table because the sledgehammer is really not messing up that bad. So he just flips it over. He smashes a monitor at one point and he brings the camera. He hits the camera guy, I think, with the sledgehammer. Then he gets the camera and kind of props it up on the chair, threatens to destroy it. And so they do like an angle where you can see the camera he has set up and he has it facing him. And so he's about to mess up this $50,000 camera, as we're told, that Michael Cole tells. This is a $50,000 camera. Until Vince comes out and says, you know, he's not getting what he wants because he's acting like this, that this is what the public wants. And Vince is going to give the public what they want. So he sets up a tag match later between Undertaker and Kurt Angle versus Triple H and Hulk Hogan. Triple H says he agrees. That's what he wanted. But then he still destroys the camera, which they all are aghast at. We'll have more in a second. So I guess in a way this is good because they're at least changing up the formula of SmackDown and having like a different sort of segment to start. So I think in theory this is okay. It just didn't really work out. I don't know if Triple H's character can pull it off. Like, I don't know if he's over enough to be able to be on the screen for 30 straight minutes or whatever this took. And, you know, people buy into it. I don't know. What did you think, Sean?
So, Jake, it was actually 24 minutes that this whole segment went out for. I timed it.
A brief 24.
I think I said it earlier. This is Scott Crisolo's wet dream because Triple H has dominated the whole first 24 minutes of the show. Yeah, you know, I think it's funny that the camera was kind of the last straw. You know, you can beat up the people, you can beat up the table, but, the, you know, don't destroy my $50,000 camera. And I did like the shot of the camera on Triple H's face right before he was about to destroy it. I thought that was very funny. The only other thing I'll say about this is you hear about Triple H in 2002 and 2003 and how they were just trying to push him to the moon because he is with Stephanie and they wanted to make him the top face and he got a lot of perks and privileges, et cetera, and he controlled everything and his direction. If you were to watch this segment, you would not argue that point because this is all about Triple H and it was all about him. And we just had 24 minutes of pure Triple H just carrying the first 24 minutes of SmackDown. If that doesn't tell you Triple H in 2002, 2003, I don't know what will. But for the most part, though, it wasn't bad. It just went on way too long, way, way too long. But it wasn't bad. The opening with Vince was great. The standoff was okay. I didn't think he needed to beat up the tag team champions. I thought that was stupid. But just way, 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 way too long. Not a bad opening for a show, just way too long.
Or like I said, it's you have to be a certain. There's very few people who could pull it off, you know. And I don't think he's over as like you said. I didn't think it was like horrible or anything. I wasn't like at the end of it like, oh, I can't believe Triple H was, you know, on screen for this long doing this. I get what they were doing, and they wanted to show that he's pissed off. They wanted to change it up and do something a little bit different than, you know, their typical opening segment where then they just move on after. So I kind of get what they were doing. It just. The sledgehammer stuff was a little bit weird and it didn't totally work out like he wanted to. And we're going to get to this after because we have a little bit more. But yep. Like you said, just him destroying tables and stuff is like the camera being the last straw was kind of weird.
stupid.
but two, it's like we really haven't really had that many moments doing the podcast so far where I was like, oh, this is the Triple H thing. They're trying to put Triple H over, you know, everybody else. You know,
this is the first one. Yep.
Yeah, this is the first instance of it being like, man, they are really, really focusing on him. So,
yep.
Like I said, it made it seem like they were trying to make him Austin in 98, and I don't know if that really works for him as a character. So,
agreed.
So we come back from the break again, and we see the aftermath, and this cracked me up because the way they shot it as if it was like. Like a scene from like Saving Private Ryan, like it was like the beaches at, you know, Normandy or something, where it's like they're shooting it real low at all the equipment and it's all strewn and destroyed. Like we're supposed to be so upset that this like like billion-dollar company has a broken table and a broken camera. Like who cares? Like they made it seem like it was like dead bodies or something. You know?
They did. They totally sold it. So, and then they had to recap it. So they had to add more minutes to the opening because we didn't just watch it already for 24 minutes.
Yeah, but like they show Cole and Taz. They look so somber. Like, oh my goodness, the table and the monitor has been destroyed. I mean, it's like, okay, y'all, just
yeah. It was like where they try to sell a wrestler who gets injured and they carry him out of the ring. They're all solemn about their table and the destroyed property.
Yeah, it's as if he had. Yeah, like he had like caved in the cameraman's head or something with the hammer.
Yeah, it was silly.
They said the damage is strewn through the arena. It's like it's really not though. It's just strewn like in the ring and maybe ringside a little bit. Like it was kind of goofy. But
yep.
They finally move on from it, and so now we are like a third through the show before we get our first match, which is going to be a King of Ring qualifying match. It's going to be Test versus Hurricane. And at this point, I'm even like, I was wondering, like, had they even shown how the bracket's shaking out yet? Because this is, we only have like 2 weeks until King of the Ring.
And well, no, because I think the bracket was matches. Shaken up. I don't think they showed it yet.
Yeah. I thought they might show us, like, as people are winning the qualifying. It's just weird to me to not see the bracket at all when we're going to have the show in 2 weeks. Show me the damn bracket. But anyway. Nydia mocks Hurricane earlier in the day. They kind of cut to this that she's saying that he's going to see her boyfriend Jamie Noble again soon enough. So this is just kind of an okay match. Test and Hurricane. Test does his power moves that you would expect. Hurricane tries to, you know, fight back with his typical kind of cruiserweight offense. There's a few nice reversals by Hurricane. As Test was going for like some suplexes and stuff, Hurricane kind of wiggled his way out. So I thought those were pretty cool. But then Test hits the test drive to win. And one note I made is that this is like your lightweight champion, cruiserweight champion, whatever you want to call it. And he just got pretty much squashed by Test. So maybe not the best look. I went star and a half on it as a match.
I actually went a star and a half as well. You know, first off, Nydia and Jamie Noble both play their gimmicks very, very well. Mm-hmm. And Nydia, by the way, is also in the club. So I won't go elaborate on what club she's in, but she's in the club. She definitely needs to bathe, and she's a little gross. But she does play her gimmick as the hillbilly slut nympho very, very well. And Jamie Noble as her boyfriend is really, really good, too. You know, I always had issues with names like Test and Dolph Ziggler because I think they're both really good and can be good, but I feel like their porn names drag them down. Like, Test is such a dumb name, and then Dolph Ziggler sounds like a porno star. And I think really part of the problem with Dolph Ziggler is his name. I don't think it gets over because of how stupid it is. And if you guys really think about it, that's really part of his problem. But anyway, it's the same kind of thing with Test. His name is just stupid because he's not that bad in the ring. And I'm with you on the Cruiserweight Champion. This is the second time earlier we saw Bradshaw lose to William Regal on the last episode. Now you have your Cruiserweight Champion getting squashed by Test when he's getting ready to start a major feud here with Noble. Why do I care if Noble beats him at this point? Because I just saw him get squashed by Test. So very silly, sacrificing your Cruiserweight Champion. You could put Al Snow or Maven or somebody in this, but I went 1.5 stars.
Yeah, just kind of definitely they don't seem to care about. I mean, even the tag titles, I mean, maybe the Intercontinental is the only title they seem to halfway have any kind of grip on what's going on with it. The other ones just seem to be, you know, they care about it when they feel like it, and other times they just forget.
Yep.
All right. But anyway, Nydia and Jamie Noble come out after he loses the match to slap Hurricane around and taunt him, which you get, of course, the incredible Jamie. I'm Jamie Noble. You like that, boy? Which is awesome. And he now has his jorts. When he debuted last week, he actually did not have the jorts. He now has the hillbilly jorts on, which I always
like
loved.
I said, him and Nydia always look awesome, and they're great in this role. They both look like total trash.
And they actually take his mask off. It kind of shocked me that they steal his cape and rip his mask off. So it's a pretty brutal little beatdown they do after the match.
Yeah, too bad he was already squashed. It would have meant something. Like that's what I'm saying is they did this whole aftermatch angle after he squashed. So to me, it didn't really mean anything. And to your point, it should have meant more. They took his mask and his cape, and that should have been a big, big deal. And I think it was an afterthought.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you just have him lose when you're trying to build a feud. Makes no sense. But all right, carrying on, we get Tajiri versus Hardcore Holly. I don't think this was a King of Ring qualifier. If it was, I didn't note it. I think this was just a match.
I think it was a qualifier.
Yeah, well, why not? Let's just, they all can be King of Ring qualifiers. Why not? Sure.
Well, I think the context is Holly shouldn't be in a qualifier, and that's probably what your perception is.
So this is the first time I think so far, and it's going to happen throughout the show, where they actually talk on commentary about Austin walking out, and they start building up that it's going to be on this episode of Confidential. So is there any chance that anybody at this time would have thought maybe this was a work? I don't know.
I'm not sure, because back then the dirt sheets were out. So if you were on the internet, Meltzer was reporting all this stuff already. So I think at this point, based on the way they shifted on Raw and now the way they're talking about they're going to release everything on Confidential and the way you kind of hear the announcers talk tonight, I think everyone thought it was pretty legit at this point.
Yeah, I wouldn't think. Yeah, I was just wondering, because it's just such a quick turnaround. I mean, to be like already have the Confidential episode like cooking is pretty wild.
The only point of reference I have is watching it when it first aired, and I thought it was real. I didn't think it was an angle or anything. So that's the only point of reference I really have.
Yeah, it doesn't seem – it would be really, really, like, you know, committed to, like, a shoot angle if they went this far with it. But it just came to mind. But anyway, typical as a Holly match. We get a lot of chops. I did like the finish of this match. You know, it was kind of just shared – typical, like, these two guys are pretty good. Both, you know, Tajiri's really awesome. Hardcore Holly's a pretty solid wrestler. He can do his stuff that he does pretty well. So this is a nice, like, tight match. Both guys' stuff look good. And I did like the finish. So Tajiri goes and puts him in the tarantula, and Holly kind of stops him and then turns that into the Alabama Slam.
Yeah,
which I thought was a pretty cool finish. But just two guys who could go, killing some time. I went 2 stars on it.
I actually went 2.25. I thought it was a good match, but again, for me, I don't know why Holly is beating Tajiri. I mean, Tajiri has been in a prime role. He had the Tori angle. He did the great thing with Tamaven in the hospital after the Tori relations with him in the hospital, which was a great episode, by the way. That was great. Mm-hmm. And here he is. He's jobbing to Holly for no reason at all. And I just thought the wrong person went over. But it was a very solid match. So I went 2.25.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking. They almost seem to be doing a little Holly push right now.
Holly's getting a lot of shine from the Tough Enough show at this point in time, and that's why he's getting a little bit of the push.
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah, that makes sense, I guess. But I agree with you. It's just, I was kind of liking the stuff he was doing with Orton, but I think Orton maybe, I don't know if I've talked about it, I don't know if Orton got hurt yet or what, but I did like the thing he had going on with Orton, but that doesn't seem to be have gone anywhere. But such is life. We continue on. We have Val Venus backstage, and he threatens Chris Jericho, who is relishing watching the tape of him beating down Edge from the previous week, which I thought was a nice heel touch. And so on the heels of this, we get a tag match, which is going to be Val Venus and Kidman versus Chris Jericho and Storm. So a little reuniting of the Thrill Seekers from Smoky Mountain Wrestling here.
Yeah, kind of a big deal if you're a if you're a fan of Smoky Mountain. This was a big deal at the time.
And I would think that, you know, South Carolina, that could have been, you know, I guess it could have been in that area, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so they kind of, so Kidman kind of ends up as our face in peril in the early going. I thought Storm and Jericho worked really well together. I mean, no surprise, they're both great wrestlers and had teamed together before, and they have good chemistry. I made a note in here because Jericho goes for a line salt and he misses it. And I was wondering, like, what's the completion percentage on the line salt? I don't know if it could be that great because he does seem to miss it quite a lot.
Yeah, like, it usually seems to set up a knee to the gut or something like that. Yeah. Usually it's like the Ric Flair over the top rope thing now at this point for him.
Yeah, and so that kind of allows them to – he misses the line salt, which allows Kidman to start kind of making a little bit of a comeback. And then finally, Kidman actually beats Storm with a roll-up. So they kind of put over – I guess I would consider the underdog team here for sure because, you know, Jericho's like an upper card, you know, near main event guy. Mm-hmm. And even though he didn't take the pin, he still lost. But I really enjoyed this. It was, you know, super high energy. Real tight, had some good near falls. Everybody, just a bunch of guys who all know how to hit their spots in a tag match, especially Jericho and Storm. They were really awesome in this. So I went 2.75.
I also went 2.75. I thought it was a really fun tag team match. The main problem I have with it, though, is so Jericho just came off this great angle. He's been like your one of your main event heels with Angle throughout the history of this pod, and now Edge is injured, and I feel like this match is almost a demotion to him. Mm-hmm. Like, he just lost a tag team match that had Billy Kidman in it and Val Venus. And Val Venus hasn't been relevant in a long time. And Kidman, you know, the last time I was on this show, they were making jokes about people didn't know who he was because he had no personality. And now your top heel, who's been on your top heel on SmackDown for months, is jobbing in a tag team match with these guys. And this is a thing with Jericho that I get worried about is, here we are now, and this is what I meant earlier about Edge being out. You're going to miss him because I feel like Jericho gets demoted because Edge is out. This feels like a demotion, even though the tag team match is wonderful. I feel like it's a demotion for Jericho, and it didn't make me real happy to see Jericho in his tag team match. Does that make sense?
Because, yeah, it seems like you would. No, I definitely agree. It seems like you would have Jericho pin Val because, I mean, what the hell are you doing with Val Venus anyway? He's just kind of in here because he's supposed to be like Edge's buddy. Why not have Jericho beat him in this match? So just to continue, you know, like that way Jericho can say when Edge does come back, whenever it is, you know, yeah, beat your buddy up too when you were gone right after I beat you up, you know, something like that. Like you said, what is the, you know, then you could protect Kidman a little bit. And it's, yeah, there's anybody you need to protect in here is Jericho. So why, like, what do they gain by letting Kidman win?
Yeah, what do they gain by Lance taking the pin? You know, because Lance has some good stuff they could do with them too. Kidman's not going to, Kidman or Val Venus are not going to lose anything by getting pinned. So
yeah, Val Venus needs to lose. He's doing nothing.
Yeah, correct.
But we do have controversy, Sean. So maybe that's where this is going because Lance is upset. Because he claims that his shoulder was up. So we'll see where this goes. Because he's pissed off after the match that his shoulder was up. So We'll see more of this later. We go backstage. We have an interview with Hulk Hogan. He says Triple H will win at King of the Ring. And then he starts pointing out the similarities between he and Kurt Angle, Hogan and Kurt Angle, that is, including that they're both bald. But the difference is that Hogan lost his to Mother Nature and Angle lost his in a match. And then he pretty much challenges Kurt Angle at King of the Ring. This is a very Hulk home. I put that as a very Hulkster promo. He says dude like 400 times. He's like, let me tell you something, dude. So he kind of was kind of compared to where he was like a month or two ago when he was champion, where a lot of his promos, he was a little bit more subdued and serious a little bit. Now he's back in the full on like Hulkster mode. And it's clear what his role is now, and it's to put other people over.
Yeah, that Hogan, the rejuvenated Hogan world tour for me is over. I hated this promo. He felt very stale. He did a bunch, to your point, dude a lot. He did a bunch of bald tropes, making a bunch of bald jokes. And the Hogan train's over for me at this point. It's kind of like you're done. And you know what, to your point, you know what his role is here. And yeah, I hated this. I hated this promo. And I hate Hogan's feathers that were blowing in a fan. They had a big fan blowing, so his feathers were blowing in the wind. This whole thing just sucked. I hated it.
Yeah, I don't mind it for his position on the card. You know, he's not in the main event anymore. He's just kind of like a nostalgia. Like, hey, look, Hulk Hogan doing a Hulk Hogan interview. But yeah, he's definitely, his main goal right now is to get Triple H over. Because like even here, the main crux of the promo is about him challenging Angle. But he still has to throw in at the beginning that he thinks Triple H is going to win. Like, so back to your point of like everything having to be about getting Triple H over, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
All right, so now we cut back to Storm, who, like we said, was very pissed off because he said his shoulder was up, so he confronts Brian Hebner, and he comes to the conclusion that he knows what this all stems from. The Hebners have a history of screwing great Canadians. He doesn't say the name, but obviously referring to Bret Hart, and so he believes that Brian Hebner is biased against him because he's Canadian, and they leave it at that for the time being.
Yeah, the only note I made about that is at least it put some context into the match we saw earlier, having some kind of purpose, hopefully, and some kind of story. So that's the only win for this, is I feel like at least the match is justified now for maybe something they're doing later.
Yeah, I guess that's their way of, yeah. So we'll see what happens between Brian Hebner and maybe we get like a Mike Posey style, you know?
Oh God, I hope not. Can you imagine that?
Anyway, at least Lance Storm's better than David Young. But continue on. That's enough TNA.
Yes.
So we get an interview with Linda Miles, one of the co-winners of Tough Enough. She talks about how in her recent debut on Velocity, her co-winner Jackie screwed her, and now Jackie has challenged her. This is kind of a standard babyface sort of promo. She was a little bit stilted. But she does reveal that her partner is going to be Trish, so kind of smart to put her Trish to try and get her some shine.
Yeah, I have no idea how Linda Miles or Jackie won Tough Enough, because they had Kenny King and Matt Kenny King, who's in Ring of Honor right now, and Matt Morgan, who would go on to bigger things in, let's say, TNA. They both had long term better careers, so I really don't know how these two girls won, but. Yeah, I don't care about this. I guess it's good to give the Trish rub to Linda Miles, but yeah, I hate it.
Yeah, I don't think poor Linda's going to do much, unfortunately, for her.
No.
All right, so we go to Vince's office. Angle is meeting with Vince. He says that he accepts Hogan's challenge. And then, I love this part, right? He says, he said that Hogan plans to go and pull out all of his freshly grown hair that has just grown back since he's got his head shaved. Which
and
I
it almost popped Vince. I thought Vince was going to bust out laughing because you could see it in his face.
Yeah, he says, Hogan's going to pull my hair out from the roots. Like, clearly, she's in a wig. He asks Vince to pull it. He asks Vince to pull it. And Taker interrupts before he can. Taker says apprehensive because he says Triple H is crazy. And then Vince says not to worry about it, that it's a safe. But I feel like this is like on SmackDown constantly, where like the heels are worried about, you know, something. And Vince is like, no, don't worry about it. It's going to be okay. Trust me. And it's usually Triple H. So usually worried about Triple H. And Vince says tells him not to worry.
Yeah, well, here's a couple other things. So this angle stuff with the hair is greater. He reminds me of Rick Steiner because he has the Rick Steiner wig with the headgear on, so he looks like Kurt Steiner. And I think Coach Vince, like Vince was being a coach, I thought was awesome. But the promo's just there for the sake of being a promo, so it was nothing great. But I loved Kurt Steiner, and I thought Coach Vince was really good here. So it was a cute, it was kind of a cool little mini promo. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love how, like, Angle sells it so well that he's, like, he really makes you believe that he almost thinks it's his real hair. Like, he's so committed to it.
He had me believing him. It was good.
Amazing. All right, anyway, we continue on, and we get Reverend Devon, who is here to testify about masturbation.
Oh, because anybody,
anyone who masturbates will burn in hell. And Farouk,
it's a basically sin. It's a sin. Is what it was. It's a sin to do that.
And so Farouk comes out and pretty much just says that he masturbates. Like, Farouk just pretty much admits, like, yeah, I masturbate. Damn. And and then I guess technically beats him. I guess it ends up being a match, but he ends up beating him.
He did.
It's just so weird that Farouk just comes out. He's like, what? Don't you talk to me smack about masturbating, boy?
Well, I mean, a couple notes here. Devon's music is absolutely ridiculous. And then, I don't remember this promo at all. So when he started talking about masturbating, I said, holy shit, is he really talking about that? And we're all going to burn in hell. And then the first thing I thought to myself is like 99% of America is going to burn in hell because doesn't everybody do that? And then, but then Farouk coming out and admitting he does it, I mean, it popped me. The other thing I did like is Farouk actually had new tights on. He didn't have his APA tights on anymore. He had kind of like, I guess, poker cards instead of the APA, even though the music's the same, but at least it was something different. And I was also shocked when he said, I masturbate. And then he turns around and he won the match. Ron Simmons winning this match shocked me because Devon's the one beginning to push. So I don't know what they were trying to accomplish here, but
he was fired up protecting the honor of all the masturbators throughout the land.
I think we all know that we're all sinners and we should not masturbate. That was my takeaway from this.
It was just so weird because like it came in so hot. It wasn't a long segment. It's just they cut to the ring. He's like, if you masturbate, you're going to hell. Farouk comes out. It felt like 2 minutes. I didn't even notice the tights because I was so just like, what is going on here?
I would tell everybody, listen, this is a really pointless thing on this show, but go out of your way to watch it for the entertainment value of this. This is a very entertaining segment.
Just for Farouk telling us to masturbate.
Yes, just for that. Go out of your way to watch it.
All right, we're carrying on. Now we get the women's tag team match that we had earlier. We have Trish and Linda versus Ivory and Jackie. And again, on commentary, they're talking about Stone Cold walking out, pushing the Confidential show. Linda definitely has a good look. Like, she's like a physical specimen. She's super tall, like, real flexible, just looks like an athlete. And I would assume, like you were saying earlier, how did she win? That, to me, that has to be just that look that she's, you know... You know, she almost looks like somebody you would see in NXT now, you know, like somebody they would look and try and build up in NXT now. But really just kind of a real basic tag match. You know, obviously the rookie people don't look super great, but it was just kind of a solid tag match. And Trish nails the Stratisfaction to win. I want a star and a half on it. It was just kind of a tag match.
Yeah, I actually want a star and a half on it, too. I didn't think it was... terrible. And again, Ivory, I think Ivory's another underrated hottie. She's pretty hot. I thought the match surprisingly wasn't awful. I thought Linda and Jackie, basically what they did was an exhibition in the ring of the moves they've actually know how to do. That's really what they did, is give them an exhibition. But yeah, it wasn't bad. It could have been a lot worse. 1.5 stars. It was harmless. So move on.
Yeah. I feel like they just want to get them out there to get them some exposure on the main shows. But
yep.
All right. Now, Vince tells us that he's in his office. He tells Stacy that he now owns everything and tells her to call him Mr. McMahon. Don't call him Vince. And someone's knocking at the door, and it's Dawn Marie. He goes to kiss Stacy, but she's not into it. And it ended there. That was the segment. I was just kind of, okay.
Yeah. I was a little creeped out by the call me Mr. McMahon line. And then I thought it was weird that all of a sudden Stacy's not into him. Like, she's always been into his power, and now all of a sudden she's not. I thought the kiss that he gave her was really gross and disturbing. And then the only thing I'll say about Dawn Marie is that she is another member of the club. And now we'll move on.
It's a very extensive club.
Yeah, it is a very extensive
club. But anyway, club. Yeah, it just felt very abrupt. Like, they just kind of came out of nowhere with this. And it's like they throw in these, like, 30-second segments with him and Stacy and Dawn Marie every week. And it's like, I guess maybe Stacy's supposed to be jealous, maybe. That's why she doesn't want to kiss him. I don't know, because she seemed pretty into it in all the previous weeks.
Yeah, I know. This one was so weird, but the kissing was so gross. Like, this one just grossed me out. Like, she looks like 20, and he's like 50. It was just disturbing to watch. He swallows her. He's
like, well, considering he's the one putting every, you know, has the final say. So,
correct.
All right, anyway, we finally get to see the bracket, Sean. We finally get to see the King of Ring bracket. Right. They show it. I can't really remember any of the matchups, but we did get to see the bracket. So King of the Ring is in, like, basically 2 weeks. All right, so we are ready for our main event tag team match, which is going to be Undertaker and Kurt Angle versus Hogan and Triple H. But on his way to the ring, Hogan gets jumped by the heels. It always seems like Hogan's getting thrown into pipes. Whatever Taker pulled him on the motorcycle, like, he's always hitting pipes.
I made the same note. I said, I love the random pipes every time Hogan's coming to the ring. I had the exact same note.
Yeah, he really should avoid the pipes. Well, at least those kind of pipes, brother. The other type are all good. Anyway,
those pipes don't work for me, brother.
And so Triple H has to start this out by himself. So he takes out Angle early, which kind of leaves him with Triple H. But then we settle into a Taker recovers, and we pretty much start working a handicap match with Triple H having to take on Angle and Undertaker. So kind of going back to what you were saying earlier, Sean. So now we got Triple H took over the show in the beginning. Now he's facing Angle and Taker all by his lonesome. But they do work him down. It's not like he dominates him. They work him down. He tries to do a comeback, but Kurt cuts him off with the Rolling Germans that look pretty good. They pull a chair in, and for some reason, you know, I hate to keep bringing up TNA, but reminding me of TNA because we just use a chair and, you know, no repercussions. No DQ.
I made the same note, same exact note.
Just pull out. So can't just blame TNA for that. They're doing it here. I thought, too, it struck me at this point, I thought Cole, I've been okay with him on these shows for the most part, but for some reason on this show, I felt he kind of sucked. I don't know. I felt like he was given a lot of, like, really obviously, like, canned lines, which is something he kind of gets criticized for throughout his career, especially later on. But I felt like he was really doing, like, a lot of Michael Cole canned lines. I don't know if they were, like, things that were being fed to him. Like, I don't have any specific examples, but at this point in the show, I was just like, I feel like he was just really hitting hard with all these, like stuff that he clearly was told, okay, you need to say this and say this, and he just sounded really unnatural saying it. I don't know.
No, I think I agree. I think he's still he's still not comfortable in his role 100%, and I'm sure he's getting a lot of canned feeds through the headset from Vince.
Yeah, I'm sure it probably wasn't a good time to, I'm sure yep. Vince was very, you know, probably in his most control freak mode with the Austin stuff maybe, so. But then before Hogan can even come out, Triple H, I guess, gets frustrated. He pulls out the sledgehammer and uses it for the DQ. Really, the match was all about Triple H taking a beating. I thought the heels kind of got into a nice little groove working him down. Mm-hmm. They're clearly trying to show Triple H overcoming the odds and fighting through. I thought the finish was a little out of nowhere with him getting the sledgehammer because I don't know if that's really what you do if you're trying to put him over as like a fighting baby face that's just going to keep fighting through it, that he just kind of bails out and gets the sledgehammer. But as it was fine. I really thought Taker and Angle did a good job kind of tagging in and out and wearing him down. So I went 2.25 on it as a match.
Yeah, the match isn't bad. I actually went 2.5. Mm-hmm. I thought the beginning of the match, I thought it was smart strategy by Triple H attacking Angle, knowing that Hulk Hogan was out. So I thought that was good. I think Triple H took a hell of a beating. You know, he took multiple suplexes. He took an apron leg drop. He took punches. He took kicks. He took elbows. And the other thing I appreciate about Taker is he does a lot of shit talking while he's beating up Triple H, which I thought was really great. I thought Kurt's punches outside on Triple H looked really, really savage. I made a note that the chair shot didn't call the DQ, but the sledgehammer did. So there must be some, maybe, maybe in TNA they need to start using sledgehammers, and then people start getting DQ'd because the chairs don't work here either. But yeah, it was good, but it was silly. Triple H losing by DQ to a handicap match. I think it kind of made Kurt and Undertaker look a little weak, because he's in this one by himself. He should not be getting DQ'd against two of the biggest stars in the company. It should be kind of a thought process that they should actually beat him. I thought it was far-fetched. I thought Hogan's outfit looked like a tie-dye onesie, so his outfit actually looked like a onesie. It didn't even look like tights. It looked like pajamas he was wearing. And here's what's interesting. He couldn't come out and wrestle the whole match, but he's okay at the end to close the show. So, yeah, and then the close of the show, I really liked the faces posing, and I liked Hogan putting on the Steiner gear and the hair. I thought was really funny because you finally get the – and I don't know if you're going to talk about this, and if you did, I apologize. Mm-hmm. You finally get to see Kurt bald. So, but anyway, I also didn't need to see Kurt's ass in it either. But, yeah, I thought it was a solid match. I think just fundamentally it was a stupid booking of a match.
Yeah, do you think Triple H would have been like, he would have gained more if he would have just lost, even if he loses by a count out or something, like if he just takes a shit kicking and they just beat him up outside the ring, and because I feel like it would build some sympathy, you know?
Here's the way I look at it. He dominated the first 24 minutes of the show and came out looking great. He came in here and took on two of the best in the company, taking a shit kicking in a handicap match. Him losing would not have hurt him at all. It would have made him look like he would have come out of this shining even bigger because of how he started the show to begin with and how he ended, taking a good ass kicking and still standing tall even though he took the loss. So him winning to me just remain, or him being DQ'd is fine. He still lost the match, but I think it should have been at a bigger level than a DQ.
Yeah, I agree. I think he should have, I think he loses like by count out or something. Or even gets pinned. I mean, he's facing two top guys, like, or just dissecting him, you know.
Something to him where he couldn't get up and just count him out because he took such a shit kicking or something would have been a better ending. You're right.
Yeah. But like you said, the post-match angle, Hogan comes in to make the save. The pants angle. So they really, this is not the first time in doing this podcast that we've seen Angle's ass. They really enjoy showing his ass, literally. And so he gets, I was kind of surprised that they took the wig off right here. I thought maybe they would have saved that for King of the Ring maybe or something.
Yeah, I almost said that would have been my moment of the night, but I have another one. But that's a pretty big moment that they reveal his hair, like him being bald here. I thought that was a big deal.
Yeah, I think I'm hoping that what it leads to is him being like just completely like, I hope it sets him off like for going into King of the Ring and the match at King of the Ring, that he like, you know, kind of snaps a little bit. Like, I hope they play off of it, you know?
Yeah, make that the pivot point of this goofy hair thing and turn him into a beast and a pit bull. This could be like the shift moment, right? That'd be great.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. We'll see. Yep. But anyway, that's where we close out the show with Hogan. And see, I thought that was a little awkward too. Like, I get what you want Triple H to pose with Hogan all, but it's like, I don't know if that really fits his character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like such a pure, like, white meat babyface thing to do, and he's really not that kind of character, you know?
Yep. He started off as Stone Cold, destroyed equipment, used sledgehammers on people, and now he's posing like Hulk Hogan at the end. So he's somewhere between Stone Cold and Hulk Hogan in this show.
Yes. But that closed out our show. So like we had talked about, this was really the Triple H show. He was featured on two-thirds of it, if you count the really long opening whole angle that they did, and then this main event match, and any times he showed up in between, he was really a heavy focus on this, legitimately, for probably at least half the show.
45 minutes of an 85-minute show. 45 minutes.
Get the Sean analytics.
45 minutes. This is Sean math. 45 minutes of an 85-minute show. Do the math.
Yeah. So a little bit over half, like, you know.
Yep.
Like, so I think that, like we just talked about, so you almost have to judge the show on how it, since it was all about him, did it work for what they were doing, you know? And I think in both of them, I wouldn't call it a failure or anything, but I don't know if either thing landed like they wanted to. Like, I don't know if the first segment worked like they expected to, and I don't know if him posing with Hogan at the end and like the match where he gets himself DQ'd with the sledgehammer, like, I don't know if either one of those worked out the way they did. And so, you know, I don't know if it was executed the way, because everything else in the show is essentially, you know, a throwaway. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to judge it on that. And based on that and everything else being kind of a throwaway, I like the tag match, but like you said, it had a kind of a weird ending and it was sort of a throwaway. So it's hard to, you know, it didn't matter that much. So I went 4 out of 10 on this one.
I agree with you. I went 4 out of 10. I thought it was a lot of filler. And again, I felt Edge being missing in this show. Like, I missed Edge. And, you know, like I said, the Jericho thing made me sad seeing him in the tag team match. And it was just too much Triple H for me. I mean, like I said, 45 minutes of an 85-minute show. And I'll be honest with you, most of this show felt like an episode of Velocity. But what I will tell you is I would give it 10 out of 10 just for Ron Simmons coming out saying he likes to masturbate. So but 4 out of 10.
Yeah, I agree. And it's you don't really have many undercard angles because most of the undercard is all tied up in the King of the Ring. So,
yep.
Yeah. All right. So based on that, we will go into our awards. Best match for me, I kind of had a few that were a little bit on the same level, but I think I'm going to go with the tag from SmackDown, the Jericho Storm. I just really love Jericho and Storm in there. I thought they worked really well.
I went with Flair and Vince. I like the grandpa fight. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, I liked it too. That would probably be my number two. That was a pretty close one for me. I enjoyed that too. My best moment, there's a few, like you said, you could go with Angle getting the wig, but it was kind of so quick too. I actually went with the Shawn promos, and if you want to be more specific, the super kick. I thought that was all, the way they did that was pretty well done. I enjoyed his promo.
I agree. That was really well done. So I went back and forth. I went between that. I went between the hair. But then I realized I went with Arn's face when Brock Lesnar came in the ring because the oh shit face on Arn was so great. And then him bailing on Flair was even better. So I went with Arn Anderson.
Yeah, I think what put the Shawn one, you know, over the top for me is that it's kind of historical too. So it kind of gets that bonus, like his first promo back, you know.
Makes total sense.
Yeah. Best show, a rare victory for Raw. Usually SmackDown wins this, but I thought Raw was a little better.
Agree. I went with Raw.
My LVP, this one was a little tough because it's like I almost went with the whole Job Squad, three-man team from Raw, but I didn't know if that was fair because, you know, they're just going job. I kind of went with Test. I don't know. Something about, I'm not a big Test fan.
Told you it's his name. Yeah. But I actually went with D-Von for not approving of masturbation.
just least valuable. How dare you?
I don't appreciate the masturbation shaming by D-Von tonight, so he's the LVP.
Like Ron Simmons, he's the Florida State masturbation, which is just two things that he's passionate about, playing poker. Anyway, MVP, this was tough. I went with Angle. Just, I feel like Angle's a good go-to when nobody really stands out. I think you can go Vince, but yeah, you know what? Let's go Vince. I'll give it to Vince. He carried Raw.
I'm going with Vince too. 100% going with Vince tonight. He saved Raw. I mean, he totally just made, I mean, and then he also did a great job opening SmackDown too. So I'm definitely going with Vince.
Yeah, the more I think about it, if I'm thinking valuable, if he's not on Raw would probably just be a dumpster fire.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so our top five, I'm going to go Angle for sure, Vince, Shawn, I thought for that promo, Flair, and then I was kind of stuck on the last one. Let's go, I don't know, give me an idea for my number five. I'm stuck with my number five, Shawn.
Let me see. I had Brock. Did you have Brock?
No, but I'll go with Brock based on, yep, Brock's a good five. Because he's in that bang. He was aligned with Vince, yeah.
Yeah, I had the exact, yeah, so I had Flair, I had Vince, I had Brock, Triple H, and Shawn Michaels. And I had to give it to Triple H just because the whole show was built around him, and I had to give it to him, so.
Yeah, I understand that. He could easily have been on mine, but I feel like if you get that much time, I feel like in order for me to really, like, I just didn't feel like you hit it the way you should if you're given that kind of, you know.
Well, to be perfectly clear, we should kick him out and put Ron Simmons in.
Yeah. So, the defender of masturbation.
What a gimmick.
All right, Sean, but that will wrap us up for this episode. This is a good one. Historic time. So this is one thing I'll say about these is, you know, like I started this, obviously the whole point of the podcast is the ruthless aggression era, which kind of where I started, you know, I think a lot of people would say we're not quite there, but I definitely think Austin leaving is kind of like one of the first real stepping stones. Cause this definitely of a lot of the shows I've done, this really felt like a transition. Like these two shows, you could feel things really with Sean coming back, Austin leaving, everything feels very, very in flux right now. And I feel like this is one of the first, you know, I feel like you could really feel things moving into a different era and like the last vestiges of the Attitude Era kind of dropping off here.
Yeah, this is what I would call a reboot of the reboot. Mm-hmm. And you're right. This is really what sets it off. And so if you want to think ruthlessly aggressive, I think this moment and this group of shows is really where it starts taking off. I think I agree with you on that.
Yeah. But anyway, thanks for coming on. Do you have anything you would like to drop in and plug?
I have a lot of things, but I'll let you impact or talk. Well, impact. I'll let you talk about the one that we're on. But obviously, the big one for me is NWA Crack and Roll. By the time this drops, I think the new episode, looking at July 85, will drop the day after this drops. So that's a really fun episode. We have Ben Locke on as our fourth rotating horseman. So looks at the Great American Bash of July of 85, their first one. So that's a really good episode. We have the new episode of Chicken Salad that should be out at this point where we're doing Halloween Havoc 98. That's always a fun podcast to do. And then the latest Mount Rushmore that just dropped. I was on there for the DC and Marvel Villains panel. And then on this feed, we have the Shrink Rat Pod that Jenny, Tim, and I do on the latest episode drop, looking at the Killing Joke. So those are all the things I got going on. So, again, Jake, thanks for having me. I absolutely love this podcast. It's one of my favorites, and I always love coming on.
Anytime, Sean. So as Sean said, he and I, along with Logan, Ben, Matt, Souza, we all do a podcast on the Place to Be feed on a TNA, Highway to the Impact Zone, where we go through the wonderful, glorious world of TNA and the good, bad, and ugly of that. So that drops like every 2 weeks. So just check it out. We're just going through. We are almost through the weekly pay-per-views. We're grinding through them. We're almost past them.
Thanks. It's a shit show of a journey.
Yes. But anyway, it's a lot of fun to do. We have a lot of fun with our podcast. And besides that, be sure to check out all the other excellent podcasts on this feed, like Sean talked about when he was on. We have plenty of wrestling shows, Wrestling Warzone, another TNA pod where they're actually going from TNA from the beginning, TNA Never Dies, where JT and Aaron and Jenny are going from the very beginning of TNA, which might even be a bigger shit show than the TNA we're watching.
I think I said in the chat earlier, it's the biggest hot mess train wreck of a show you will ever hear on any of these feeds. They are absolutely batshit crazy on that podcast.
Yeah. And of course, Extreme Three-Way Dance, just a ton of stuff, and you know, more stuff coming out with comics stuff now. We have This Week in the NFL with Cowboy and John D'Amato. So just a ton of stuff. Just check out the feed. If you're listening to this, I'm sure you know how to get the feed. Just look and find something that tickles your interests and check it out. But other than that, for myself and my wonderful guest Sean Kidd, this has been another episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. All right. If you masturbate, you're going to hell. Bye-bye.